This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
Welcome in. It is the Thursday, February 6th edition of the NFL Spotlight Show. What a show we have prepared over here today. Of course, NFL Honors is officially tonight. We officially find out all the awards for this past regular season, as well as the Hall of Fame. Here on the show today, we're going to go around the NFL, talk about all the latest news and headlines, as well as we have an interview with the UFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, a game analyst for Fox, and a three-time Super Bowl champion. It is Daryl Moose Johnson, who joined us here today from Radio Row in New Orleans. We're going to have more interviews coming up here on the podcast feed tomorrow as well, but we have Moose over here on the show on the back end coming up as well. So a lot going on over here. Let me bring in my good friend Ben Allen. Ben, what is going on? How are you?
What's up, Ari? Yeah, we are another day closer to Super Bowl 59, and on Wednesday, friend of the show Trey Hendrickson stopped by the Pat McAfee show, and he discussed his future with the Bengals. He expressed that he wants to win a championship in Cincinnati, but also revealed that he hasn't loved the way that some of the communication has been happening with Bengals director of player personnel, Duke Tobin. You know, he's been expressing his thoughts on the negotiation to the media. I just was curious with you, what other context can you add to what this negotiation has been and what it will be?
All right, so there is a lot over here, and I want to take everyone behind the curtain for a second because you mentioned Trey was on the show over here about a month ago. Basically, the first thing I want to say is Trey Hendrickson is not a media guy at all. He does not like speaking to the media. Even just getting him on our show, he was on our initial list when we started back in July, and getting him was very, 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 very difficult, and finally we were able to make it happen. The reason is he doesn't like talking about himself. He just doesn't. So the fact that he was even at Super Bowl Media Row and did a 40-plus minute interview with Pat McAfee says a lot, and it's not because he wants to talk about himself. It's because this contract situation is something that is really, really frustrating for him, and he doesn't want to show that frustration. And it was just interesting to see him being there for those 40 minutes and talking about it. And he did reveal some stuff. First of all, the fact that Duke Tobin, who's essentially the GM in Cincinnati, did that interview at the Senior Bowl a couple of weeks ago and basically said, you know, it's not easy to make everybody the highest paid player in the NFL. Does Trey Hendrickson deserve a raise? Yes, he does, but it takes two sides to tango. He found out about that comment from Twitter, which was not appreciated for him. This has been an issue in Cincinnati for a long time where the communication from front office to players has always been a bit not the best, I would say. But look at his contract right now. He is scheduled to make just $16 million in 2025. Of course, he led the NFL in sacks this past season. He has been one of the very best pass rushers in the NFL dating back to his final year in New Orleans. And ever since he signed in Cincinnati on that big contract, 4 years, $60 million, which he immediately proved to be underpaid with his play, the way he has been going on over there. So last year, he requested a trade out of Cincinnati, and there were some talks with the two sides about an extension, and the offer that the Bengals made was way below market, and obviously he said no to it. The Bengals told him, we're not trading you, so you could do whatever you want publicly, but it's not going to happen. But now he's entering the final year of his deal, and $16 million the final year when the pass rush market has the potential to reach $40 million this offseason is obviously a no-go for him. So he wants a new deal, but we also know the situation right now in Cincinnati where Ja'Marr Chase needs a new deal. T. Higgins, of course, is an impending free agent. And there's a lot of public pressure out there from Joe Burrow to try to retain both players. So this will not be easy for the Bengals. But I'm telling you right now, the fact that Trey Hendrickson is doing these media appearances and is basically going out there. I mean, I don't know if people, I posted it on my X page. The way he discussed the contract situation, it was the friendliest way of saying, I'm going to request a trade again. He basically said that I want to win a Super Bowl for Cincinnati. It would be the best case scenario if we're able to get a deal done. And if we can't, I hope Cincinnati can win a Super Bowl with the picks they're going to get for me in a trade. I've never heard a person say that before. So he wants to stay there. He would love to stay there, but he has to get proper value. So I think the minimum offer would have to be $25 million per year. I could see this getting as high as 30 or maybe even more than that per year. That's how much he is worth there. And I don't know if the Bengals are willing to go that high. And if they're not, I think this is a situation where both sides could get into a bit of an ugly situation. I don't think it'll be as ugly as Myles Garrett because he's willing to play hardball. Trey is such a nice guy and a friendly guy and really does not want to make things ugly, but he wants a new contract. He wanted it last year. Of course, they could not get anything substantial done. And now going into this offseason, I'm telling you right now, Ben, we're going to talk about it more over here. If no deal gets done, this situation will get messy and there will be things going on over here that people will be surprised about.
If the Bengals were to opt to trade him, they obviously would be trading him to a team that would then have to pay him. What would be his value? And would that be impacted by the fact that he would have to be traded? So that number might be a little bit lesser as far as what the return is.
This is my concern with a trade. If this was any other team, I would actually have the real conversation with you, Ben, about a trade. The thing is, the Bengals and that organization, that front office and that ownership group, they do not trade players when players are frustrated. It's a long history. I mean, look at T. Higgins, look at Jesse Bates, look at, Carlos Dunlap. There was the if you guys remember the Carson Palmer situation got super ugly. He basically told them, I'm going to retire before ever playing a down for you guys. And they said, you know what? Go rot on the bench. We're not going to trade you. And eventually it took Hugh Jackson with the Raiders to offer a ridiculous package for them to finally say, you know what? We're going to trade him. Because I think it was a first round pick and multiple second round picks for a guy in the back end of his career. And they're like, you know what? We'll do this. But the point is, this is a team that will not trade their players no matter how frustrated they are. And even if they create more noise and more drama, it doesn't work. So I don't think a trade over here is a realistic option. I could be proven wrong, but just knowing this organization and knowing this front office and especially knowing that owner over there, they do things differently than the other 31 teams in the NFL. So if Trey was out there and available, they would easily be able to get at a minimum, I would say, a second round pick. And I think they'll be able to get a first round pick as well as with a contract as well for Trey that he deserves. But again, I just don't see this franchise trading him. And again, keep this in mind as well. That Bengals defense was pathetic this past year. And if they didn't have Trey Hendrickson, it would easily probably be the worst defense in all of football. So they need him if they want to stay competitive. And keep in mind what Joe Burrow said during the regular season. At the end of the year, as he was doing his media sessions, he's like, I am sick and tired of seeing us have talent in this team and seeing them leave the building. So having Trey leave or having T leave or having both leave or whatever, it was a bad look for, of course, the quarterback who they obviously are paying a lot of money for and somebody who is speaking publicly about the situation right now.
All right, continuing on. Another AFC North pass rusher was doing the media rounds on Wednesday, and Myles Garrett stopped by the Rich Eisen show, and he shared that he's actually been speaking with LeBron James, and he talked to him before he made his public trade request to get advice from someone who actually has left Cleveland twice. Ari, have you ever called LeBron before leaving a job?
No, I actually have not. And it's actually pretty difficult to get in touch with him. So Myles Garrett, obviously being a Cleveland player, he was able to get in touch with him when LeBron was in Cleveland. But all jokes aside over here, this is a situation that I was surprised that Myles Garrett was at Radio Row there on Wednesday, which is just him saying, if you think this is a joke, I'm being dead serious. Like, I want to get out of Cleveland. So I don't think there was much of a notice that he was coming. Obviously, he was on the Rich Eisen show and he was on a number of other shows. I saw him with Mina Khan, I saw him with SI, I saw him with Zach Gelb, CBS. He did the rounds over there at Radio Row, and he opened up on everything that's going on right now in Cleveland, his reasoning and his thought process throughout all of this. And in part, what he told Rich Eisen was, there are things at the trajectory of the franchise that basically I spoke to with the people in the front office and ownership and everybody that I don't think we're aligned on where the team is going in the near future. And he made it clear on multiple platforms there, whichever one it was, whichever interview he did, this is not about the money. This is about playing in competitive football in December, being in playoff football in January, and having a chance to play in February for a Super Bowl, which again, he does not believe is possible in Cleveland. So it's not about getting a new deal. Rich Eisen straight up asked him, if the Browns, you know, make you the highest paid non-quarterback in football, is that enough for you? He basically said, there is more to this than money. I am not about the money anymore. It's not about just going from Cleveland to Canton the way the GM Andrew Berry said in his end of season press conference. There's more to this for a player like him who knows he has a number of years left of year, but he wants to play in meaningful football. So there were some questions asked about teams. He was asked about the Lions, he was asked about the Commanders, asked about the Eagles. Those are the teams that he would like to end up with. But again, this all circles back to the Browns, and he mentioned this as well during his interviews that he did here on Wednesday. He knows they essentially have control over here because they have him under contract for two more years. So his goal right now is to make this as uncomfortable as possible. So it started with that statement on Monday, which is the start of the entire Super Bowl festivities. And now him showing up on Wednesday and talking about other teams and talking about how bad the situation is in Cleveland and how he cannot win there. This is him trying to make it clear to Jimmy Haslam, the owner, Andrew Berry, the GM, head coach Kevin Stefanski, and the entire organization there that I gave my 8 years over there. I was in the former number one overall pick. I signed the big contract, defensive player of the year, and all of that. But I'm looking at where the franchise is right now. I don't think we could win the way we were able to make the playoffs a few years ago. It's not the same team anymore. It's obviously a 3-win team this past year, and I want to get out of here. So we'll see if this pressure changes things in Cleveland. But as of yesterday, the last I heard from the Browns was, we're not entertaining any offers. So he's going to try everything and anything right now to make this a bit awkward.
When the game tips off, the NBA action is just beginning on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because FanDuel is your home for NBA live betting. However you want to play, now is the perfect time to join. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 plus and present in Illinois. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
In non-disgruntled pass rusher news, NFLPA Executive Director Lloyd Howell Jr. said Wednesday during an annual presser that no player wants to add an 18th game to the schedule and that 17 games is plenty. This is in stark comparison to the love NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has shown towards this idea. We're still likely a little ways away from this potentially happening, but do you think that the NFLPA could put up a real fight to keep things how they are right now?
I have a hard time seeing this actually succeeding over here where the NFLPA gets their way, because Roger Goodell and other NFL executives have been talking about the 18-game idea for a number of years now. And I remember there was a time, Ben, and you remember this as well, before this last CBA, there was talk about players saying, no way are we going to accept a 17th game. And of course, they accepted a 17th game. What's going to happen over here, and it's not going to happen for the next couple of years. It might take 4, 5, 6, 7 years. We never know how long it's going to take. But there will be a world where the NFL has 18 games, and the proposal is going to be pretty simple. It's going to be, you're going to get 18 games, we're going to add an extra bye, we're going to eliminate a preseason week, and now the Super Bowl is going to fall on President's Day weekend, and on top of that, the revenue share is going to get much bigger, and the pie is going to get bigger for you, and there'll be much more money for players. That's going to be the change of year, and obviously they're going to add more things for the players as well, but this thing has always been trending to eventually getting to 18 games. Roger Goodell started floating it a couple of years ago. He reiterated it last year before the draft when he went on the McAfee show. He did an interview recently, I believe it was with CNBC or with Bloomberg, one of those, and he again said it's something that will happen eventually. Nobody wants to watch the preseason. We want more regular games. It's eventually going to happen. It's more about when. And I think Lloyd Howell, the new NFLPA executive director, going out and saying that, I think it's more of a negotiating ploy where it's like, I don't think we're just going to accept this right away and make it happen. We have to get stuff over here for the players if we're going to add an 18th game. And just getting a second bye is not enough. So they're going to be looking for a lot more, whether it's more of the pie from the revenue, but also some other things, whether it's the practice schedule, whether it is potentially taking away the franchise tag, different types of things over here are going to have to be added on top of it in order for the players to be satisfied with adding another game. Now, if you remember, Ben, in our very, very early on in our NFL Spotlight show, when we had guys like Levante David on and Bobby Okereke on, we asked the question, what do you think about having an 18th game? all of them said it is way too much and it's way too difficult on the body. And it's not adding one more game. Adding an extra game feels like five more games on the body. So that is something that the NFL and the NFLPA are going to have to discuss about that. And I guess just adding a second bye is a way of trying to help this entire situation. But the NFL and Roger Goodell, there was a time a few years ago when Roger Goodell said, I don't know if he said it or it was reported, but he has a goal of getting the NFL to a very specific number of revenue. And I believe right now they're around $20 billion. He wants to get to that number before he officially retires. And an easy way of doing that is, of course, adding one more game. So this is the way it's eventually going to go. It's going to take time. It's going to be a negotiation. It cannot just happen all of a sudden. But whenever that happens, whether it's currently in the CBA or at the end of the CBA, eventually, it is something that I do believe will happen over here, and fans should be prepared for it.
All right, I'm going to not use my really canned Australian voice for this one, but the NFL is officially going to the land down under in 2026 when the Rams will be the first team ever to play a game in Australia. LA will be the home team in Melbourne while an opponent has yet to be determined. You excited for a game with a 16-hour time difference between New York and Melbourne?
Well, this is another initiative that Roger Goodell has had, and this is the NFL going all out for the international, getting the NFL games internationally. And we've been trying to get the man who's really the head of all of this, his name is Peter O'Reilly, on the show for a while, but he's the one who announced this news over here in New Orleans here during Super Bowl week. And yes, they're going to go to Australia. It's not in 2025. It's in 2026. And this is going to be a multi-year deal here with Melbourne, Australia, to have games over there. So the Rams are going to be the first official home team for this. But this is just the NFL continuing to go all out with international. And just, I'm going to prepare you for this. Right now, we're eventually going to be in a situation where we're going to have 16 international games every single year. They are truly going all out with all this. They don't care about the travel. They don't care about all these different things. If anything, the NFL has gotten a bit lucky because some teams over the last couple of years have been like, we're going to go travel to London and we won't even take a bye right after that, which is for the NFL, that's music to their ears because it just shows for them that the international stuff does not affect coaches and players in their eyes if they're not taking a bye after. So I always thought that was a mistake by some coaches letting the NFL do that. And because of that, the NFL has been taking even more advantage of here by going to some more countries and even further out over here by now choosing Australia. But off the top of my head, we've now done Brazil, Germany, Australia. I know there's Mexico. We have Spain coming up. Of course, we have London. We've done Mexico as well. They've obviously are continuing to expand over here. I would not surprise me if Ireland is coming up as well over here, and that will be the Pittsburgh Steelers being a designated team most likely. So they are truly going around the globe over here. Roger Goodell feels like he has basically done the max he could probably do when it comes to the United States. And now it's about getting all these other countries as well. And it got to a point, Ben, when Roger Goodell did a State of the Union press conference on Monday, he basically said that he could see a time eventually when there's an international franchise in the NFL and a Super Bowl being played internationally. So they are truly all in on all of this. I know a lot of fans are not happy about it, and they obviously want the Super Bowl to stay over here in the States, but this is something the NFL has truly been going all out with, and Peter O'Reilly has been doing a lot of it, and Australia is now coming in 2026 as well.
All right, Ari, that's all I got for you, but I want to go ahead and send the listeners over to a wonderful interview that you did on Wednesday with Daryl Johnston. I know you talked a little bit about it off the top of the show. You guys are going to learn about the UFL. You're going to get a little bit of some Cowboys stuff, maybe a little bit of some Chiefs takes in there. So go ahead, keep listening. Daryl Johnston right now with Ari.
Joining us here today on NFL Spotlight, he is the Executive VP of Football Operations for the UFL, a game analyst for Fox, and a three-time Super Bowl champion. It is Daryl Moose Johnston. Daryl, how's everything going out there in New Orleans?
It's starting to get a little crazy, Ari. You can tell we're getting a little bit further along in the week, getting a little busier.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually around, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the players get out there, coaches, executives, and everybody else. They're making the rounds, speaking on Radio Row, and I'm really excited to have you on over here because, you know, I cover the NFL, but I also covered the UFL and everything going on with that league. And it's been really impressive to see how the merger has come along over here. And I just wanted to ask you just to start over here. I remember, like, after COVID, speaking with agents who are struggling to get their players to an NFL roster. I remember like telling them, what do you think about a spring league? And they always mentioned like it never lasted. Do you feel like the UFL, where it's at right now, that you've reached this level of sustainability where coaches, executives, and players are way more comfortable of coming to you guys?
Absolutely, Ari. I think that that's one of the biggest steps that we've taken over the last two seasons. I think in 2021, you could have that impression that, you know, it's hard to trust spring football because it's never really been sustainable. But when you look at what the other groups had, and I was part of the Alliance of American Football, and that had, you know, Bill Polian and Charlie Ebersol involved in that. There was a lot of really good people there, but it's expensive to prop up a league. The finances are usually the one thing. You know, Russ Brandon, our president and CEO, will always say it's egos in the budgets that get in the way. And so the biggest thing that we tried to do here is make sure we could eliminate that. And when you have Fox and you have Redbird Capital as the partners behind you in the ownership, and then you have Danny Garcia and Dwayne Johnson as minority owners, you know, from the ability for them to generate, you know, attention and purpose to your league. I mean, Dwayne Johnson has come out and said, if there was something like this in place when I finished playing football at the University of Miami, you know, I might have gone a different route in life. Now he's done all right, you know, with the path that he's chosen, but this was something that speaks near and dear to his heart, because he knows that if this was in place, it would have given him an opportunity to lengthen that football career. So I understand when people say, you know, it's hard to trust spring football, but I really feel that we've dispelled that perception. I mean, you know, here we are going into season 2025, and, you know, I don't know what else we have to do to prove it. I think the biggest thing for us to get that proof is we had to be a bit of a salesman in year one. So you're trying to convince people, exactly to the point that was made, that I don't trust these leagues. I don't believe they're here to stay. And so in year one, you have to do that. And then we're able to finish our season and crown a champion. And then the next year, both us and the XFL are able to finish the season and crown a champion. So there's great leadership on each league. There's great football people with each league. And then when you bring that together, it was one of those fortunate situations where it was amplified and multiplied. So now you've got, you know, tremendous ownership at the top in both of the groups. You've got tremendous blending of football people, you know, coming from both leagues. So now what we've seen from year one, when we had to be a little bit of a salesman, when we were doing our calls, whether it was to agents or players and even coaches, now it's kind of reversed. Now they're calling us because they do have the faith. They do have the belief and the trust in us that this is going to be sustainable. So I think one of the big validations again this year was with an opportunity with an open coaching position. Ken Wisenhunt reached out to us and said, hey, I'd like to be considered for the opportunity in Memphis. So that really kind of solidifies and hammers home to us that we're doing things the right way, that other people are starting to believe that the spring football platform with the UFL is now going to be sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big step forward and such a quick turnaround in my mind, especially when you consider the merge and how people were wondering how is this all going to work out. It's really impressive to see it quickly turn around like that to the point where you have people approaching you. Now, one of the things that I really like about the UFL is just the technology that you guys are willing to use and trying to be aggressive to try to move the game forward. I'm just curious to hear from you. Come March, whenever everything gets underway, is there any new technology that we should be aware about that could be coming to the UFL this year?
We've got something new coming in. We actually tested it during the East-West Shrine game last week. We learned a lot about the platform. We think that there's some things that we still need to work on. So we'll introduce it on a very small scale as the season starts. If we can make some of those changes, we could increase that by the end of the season. But you will be able to see something different and something unique this season. We actually had some eyes from the NFL that were there watching how we did it. It is something that we had in place, but we were expanding it and trying to make it even more impactful. So hopefully that'll be something that we can talk about going into week one. Other than that, from a technology standpoint, we are going to increase the number of players that have communication devices. You know, one of the big things for us is pace of play and trying to get in that 3-hour window. And we really feel that the ability to have communication on the outside with everybody, you know, via, you know, a coach to player or player to player communication inside the helmet is something that can expedite that. We'll continue to press that envelope on different ways to expand our ability to have communication across the field. And they will continue to bring people into the earned spaces, you know, of a football game. It's one of the things that I struggled with a little bit, to be honest with you, Ari. You know, I felt like an NFL huddle or the NFL sideline are special areas, and you have to earn that right to be able to be invited into that space. But when you see the reaction from the fans about, you know, being able to grab something from inside that huddle as the quarterback is talking, or the interaction between our coaches and our players on the sideline with cameras right there, it really is appreciated by our fans. So, you know, as the old curmudgeon, you know, kind of loosening the reins on that a little bit and letting some people come inside and get a really cool look and be very, very transparent about what we do, you know, week to week and game to game in the UFL.
Well, you mentioned communication, and one thing that I really appreciate about the UFL, something that I think could benefit the NFL, especially considering all this conspiracy talk that's out there, is the transparency we see with the command center and Dean Blandino and all of that. Is that continuing this year? And then what I wanted to ask you is, has anyone from the NFL reached out about if they should consider doing that?
We're going to continue to do that. You know, we really feel that that's one of the best things that we have in our league. And I agree with you. It eliminates any of the conspiracy theories that are out there. You know, Kansas City gets all the calls. And, you know, if you go through the course of the game, you know, even in that game, there were some calls that went for the Bills. But when you have an impactful play that's controversial, you're always going to get that reaction. And to be able to create the dialogue, you know, I think the thing that helps is it just doesn't come from Dean Blandino or Mike Pereira, it is like, we're going to change that play and it's going to be considered, you know, a first down, you know, for the Buffalo Bills. You get to go through the whole process and see them looking at the film, and as they're talking through it, understanding the why. And anything we do, right, we always want to know the why. If we can just understand the why, that helps us accept things. So I think one of the great things that we do in that environment is allow the viewer and the fan to understand the why. You may not agree with it, but this is why I'm doing it. And I think that just helps everything. And to your point, you know, as contentious as it's gotten, you know, through the course of the playoffs, we've had a number of these scenarios. I think it's something the NFL, if they're not looking at, and they really haven't come to us to talk to about it, but that would be conversations with Mike and Dean, but they haven't really come to us to talk to us about that. But I really think they should, because I agree with you. We're not doing anything that's revealing any secrets or anything. All we're doing is allowing the viewer to understand the thought process of how you're getting to that decision. And sometimes it may be we just don't have the camera angle. It doesn't matter if the announcer says it. I say that from time to time. I think they're going to stay with this because we just don't have that definitive shot. If I'm saying that, I'm just the broadcaster. It doesn't mean anything. But if you hear that from New York or you hear that from somebody in the rules committee, that makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
It definitely does. And it's something that I really appreciate of the UFL. And I think it would be great if the NFL could at least implement it some way, somehow, a little bit to start, just so the conspiracy talk, just hearing Roger Goodell get asked these questions and the referee committee putting out a statement, it's getting a little bit out of control. And I think it would be great. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't ask some Cowboys questions here. So let me just ask you this, because you were the third ever draft pick by Jerry Jones in 1989, which basically means you've seen it from start to finish with him. Just given that perspective, how do you feel about the way things are being run right now in Dallas, especially with you, who now has that front office expertise and seeing everything from the top?
Yeah, it's hard for anybody to comment on this because we're all outsiders looking in. Unless you've actually been in there day to day, you don't know exactly what the issues are. But a lot of it goes back to, you know, the time allotted for teams to work on their craft. It's something that I've always felt very strongly about. It happened at the collegiate level. I think that impacted the player coming to the NFL. Then in 2010 with the CBA, we did that at the NFL. We restricted the time the players could spend at the facility in the offseason with their strength and performance coaches. We reduced the number of quarterback schools and OTAs. We shrunk training camp, padded practices, double sessions. Padded practices allowed during the course of the regular season. We continue to restrict the ability for a team to get better. So for me, it's really how are you preparing within the confines of the rules that are in place right now? And the one that I bring up is one of the teams in the Super Bowl. Kansas City's been to five Super Bowls in the last 6 years. Andy's old school. Andy Reid takes his players to a college environment, puts them in a dormitory room, does it a little bit old school. Patrick Mahomes practices, Travis Kelce practices, Chris Jones practices. You know, it's not something that the guys are stepping away from. They make the guys work. If you're healthy, you're practicing. And I think that Andy does a really good job of kind of staying to some of the really tried and true old school preparation methods. And a lot of the coaches are not doing that. You know, this is the one organization that I hear, you know, you can say you're pressing the guys hard, but I just don't know, you know, how hard they are. Yeah, the biggest thing for me in the off season, if somebody was to come and tell me, listen, you can't go into the facility and work with your strength coach, you know, I would have filed a grievance against my union. I mean, you can't restrict my ability to get ready for the year. I have to be in the weight room. I want to work with my strength coach. I don't want to work with somebody else. I've got to get my body ready for a 16-game NFL schedule. So, you know, it's very demanding on the body. It's a very physical game. It's a collision game. And there's a high potential for injury. So you have to do everything possible to get your body ready for that during the course of the offseason. And I just don't think the guys have enough time. So you have to find a way within the structure of the system, the way it's presented right now, and really kind of push the edge of those envelopes. And I'm not sure that Dallas is doing that right now, but they would be one of several teams that aren't doing that right now. And the one that I know that is the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think it's a big reason why they're at their fifth Super Bowl in 6 years.
Well, you mentioned the Chiefs, and I'll wrap up with them. I'm just curious to hear from you. Should Kansas City be able to take down the Eagles here on Sunday, get the three? How do you look at them in history when it comes to all the great teams we've had over the years?
Well, you'll be doing something that's never been done before. They've already really accomplished that, right? All the teams that went back-to-back, nobody made it back to the Super Bowl. So Kansas City's already done something that nobody's done before, you know, that's won back-to-backs. You go back to the 70s, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers that did four Super Bowls in 6 years. And then in the 90s, you know, we did three Super Bowls in 4 years. In the 2010s, the Patriots matched that with three Super Bowls in 4 years. These guys are about to do something that's never been done before. So, you know, it seems like every 20 years we have an opportunity for a dynastic team to step in and do something that's very, very unique. And I would have to say, if Kansas City wins three consecutive Super Bowls in a system that's designed around the fact that we really don't want teams to win three Super Bowls in 3 years, we want more of teams that are struggling to be able to get to the top quickly. I think that makes it even more impressive. So I think that all of a sudden, you know, you look at Kansas City and you look at the Steelers and you look at the Cowboys of the 90s and you look at the Patriots that did 3 and 4 years. They are now surpassing something. Potentially the Steelers doing 4 and 6, because that would be something that Kansas City could still do if they were not to make it back next year. So maybe that is the next bridge they have to cross. Maybe that's the group of guys that played together that have done something that is more unique than that the other teams have. But it definitely brings Kansas City into the conversation and sets them apart, because they've done something historical that nobody else has done.
Yep, it's truly incredible. We're witnessing history just like we had with the Steelers and the Cowboys and the Patriots. Moose, I want to thank you for coming on over here, sharing all the insight on the UFL, the Cowboys, and of course, this upcoming Super Bowl. We cannot wait for week one of the UFL in late March. And best of luck as everything gets on the way.
Thank you, Ari. Appreciate it.
Special thanks to Daryl Moose Johnson for joining us here on the show, a special interview from Radio Row, and we will be back here tomorrow morning with more news and notes, and as well as some more interviews from Radio Row down there in New Orleans. See you all tomorrow morning.